everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. I'm Johnny DiRola. I'm desperately looking for my glasses because I need all the support on today's day of news that I can get, and this is one form of it. Is it a big news Wednesday? I don't know. It's America. We're gonna sort it out, but we do have a special treat for you. I know it's Wednesday. Normally we have JR. Well, we got him out of the way before. Don't even worry about him anymore. He's fine. He's going on vacation or whatever. We've got Francesca Fiorentini. Francesca,
how's it going? What up, Dragon Squad? How you smelling?
Don't want to know. It's a very weird topsy-turvy week. We're basically treating Wednesday like it's Monday. It's fantastic. Maybe it can still be our subs day, but also we will be doing a top 10 list.
Francesca, it's all the days. It's every day and no days in one day. And here we are, and I'm excited, and I'm glad you've got your glasses. I don't understand how that helps you other than to see, which
that's
you feel
it.
It's that seems pretty basic, John. So glad.
It is. No, I don't want to go too in depth, but if I go long enough without it, I start to get headachy and I can't take that right now. But anyway, we do have a top 10 list, since you're probably wondering, what is it? How do I get access to it? Well, this one is very near and dear to my heart. It's going to be difficult to get through. It is our top 10 shows that were completely unjustly canceled way earlier than they should have been. And I have some recent examples of that. I have one throwback. So we're going to be talking about that, and you can get access to it on YouTube by becoming a tier 2 or tier 3 member on YouTube. So if you want to see those, as well as months of awesome top 10 lists, some about politics, most especially recently not, we will have that for you coming up very soon. With that said, Francesca, how you feeling? You want some news?
Yes.
You want to just like do an audible and just talk about whatever?
An audible?
Audible.com. It's where you can change up your show and get a different one.
Anyway. Oh, it's great. You're shouting out not even a sponsor of this show. Like, just give them free airtime. Do it.
We have a podcast, but they're not a sponsor.
No, it should be. Let's just do some ASMR sounds the whole time. Like,
so we're. Have you watched ASMR? Anyway,
I don't know. That's my biological clock ticking. Okay, let's go. Let's do this.
We're running out of time. Well, I just want to say the news might be disappointing. One person is already disappointed because producer Sophie says, if blank show isn't on your list, I'm leaving the show. And well, it's not going to be on the list. So I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want to do spoilers. But anyway, all of that is coming up. So thank you for being here, everybody. We got a lot of news to get to. And along the way, if you want to send us any messages, comments, tweets, super chats, stuff like that, we'll respond as we go. Please hit the like button and share the stream so that people know we're live. At some point, I will browse on over to our Twitter and I'll do that myself. But if you could give me the assist, that would be great. And that said, Francesca, want to do this? Okay, we're not going to be starting off with light news. So if that's what you're hoping for, we got some later on, I guess. But anyway, let's launch into this. Devastating international breaking news. We found out this morning that at some point in the night, the president of Haiti, Jovenel Moïse, has been assassinated in his home by a group of armed men who also seriously injured his wife, who at least as of when we are filming this is still alive. All of this is coming from a statement of comments made by the country's interim prime minister. So Prime Minister Claude Joseph said a group of people attacked the president's private residence and killed him, calling it an odious, barbaric act, and going on to say every measure is being taken to guarantee the continuity of the state to protect the nation. So that is the statement that was put out initially by the prime minister. Then everything had an extra level of, oh God, what is really going on? When the Miami Herald reported early this morning that, quote, the assailants claimed to be agents with the US Drug Enforcement Administration, according to videos taken by people in the area of the president's home. On the videos, someone with an American accent is heard saying in English over a megaphone, DEA operation, everybody stand down, DEA operation, everybody back up, stand down. Sources said I don't know who these sources are, so just bear that in mind. Said the assailants, one of whom spoke in English with an American accent, were not with the DEA, which I'm not putting any international assassination past the American government, but they don't generally, I think, yell out the name of the agency that they're with. That seems a bit amateurish. That said, I know less about this story than almost any story that we've ever talked about in terms of background knowledge about this particular politician. I understand some of the background of the protests that have been going on, the accusations of corruption, the accusations of fraud in the election that put him in power, the them not knowing exactly when his term was going to end. They're rewriting the Constitution. There's a lot going on, Francesca, but now we have concerns that this might have been some sort of US backed assassination. I don't know what to think.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really, I mean, it's a fascinating and awful story. Obviously, scary for Haitians, scary for Haitians in Haiti, scary for Haitians in the United States, some of whom have been deported back to Haiti, who have tried to immigrate to the United States. And I think we know that even under President Joe Biden have been deported back to a volatile and unsafe country. I do want to say, in terms of whether or not it's the United States, of course I don't put it past the US, but it's generally not been the US's MO to guns blaze as of late, excuse me. MO as of late, I would say in the last like 15 years, to do coups like this, right? We're more of the parliamentarian coup, fund the opposition. It might have been a, you know, the United States might have ultimately backed whomever this is. That being said, there's also other reports that there was Spanish being spoken, right? Not something that is obviously spoken on the island of Haiti itself. And also again, yeah, the DEA doesn't like raid and announce necessarily that they're DEA, and obviously they were not DEA. So one thing I think that is important to keep in mind is the amount of foreign influence the United States has had in Haiti over the years, in terms of propping up people like Jovenel Moïse, who was supposed to leave in February, did not leave, and the United States was perfectly fine with that, right? I think Jovenel was appointed by his predecessor, and that predecessor was appointed by the, or propped up by the United States. So that is one thing to keep in mind. The other thing to keep in mind, I'm sorry, I know we're gonna dig deeper into this, is that Haiti is incredibly, is a country overrun by drug gangs. And the influence of the drug cartel is huge in Haiti. And it hasn't always been the case, but lately, in the last couple of decades, that has very much been the case. And so let's never underestimate the amount of power and the amount that the drug war on all sides, right? Whether it's from cartels or from the DEA, how much that influences and terrorizes a population like Haiti.
Yeah, and that might explain maybe why they went with saying they're from the DEA rather than the classic CIA, because of that connection. Well, the joke's on them, because our CIA has gotten involved in all sorts of international drug stuff, so that would have worked too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I see people in the chat saying America doesn't assassinate its own puppets. Well, I mean, not always, but you don't have to go back that far to find examples of us taking out our own puppets. Anyway, not saying that that's what's happening. What I'm saying is that there's a lot of dust being kicked up, and I am already feeling like, sometimes you get this from the news, God knows what people are going to be saying about this in like 3 hours. God knows by tonight what commonly now accepted by millions of people things will be coming out of this story. It's a disaster, a tragedy. Regardless, I don't know exactly what flavor it is. But many people within one day will be speaking with a great deal of certainty about things that they are very much not certain about. So get ready for that. Now, you did a great job of filling in some of the context there. I want to give people who might not follow Haitian politics or recent Haitian history a little bit of information. So Moïse came to power in 2017 after a lengthy election process that was marred by delays and accusations of fraud. Although he had never held political office before, Moïse was tapped for the post by the country's previous president, Michel Martelly, who stepped down in 2016 without a successor in place. Moïse's time in office has been marked by an increase in political instability, allegations of corruption, and a long-running dispute about when his period in office should end. He had been ruling by decree for more than a year after the country failed to hold legislative elections and wanted to push through controversial constitutional changes. Earlier this year, amid allegations that by him that there was a coup attempt that planned to murder him and fresh protests, he moved to protect his position, ordering the arrest of 23 people, including a Supreme Court judge and a senior police official, while declaring he was not a dictator. So he did, in this case, accurately predict his own assassination, although not necessarily having anything to do with the people that he cracked down on while claiming that he was about to be assassinated. So again, that's a thing where there's a lot going on. So anyway, any other thoughts, Francesca?
Yeah, I think it is going to be interesting what the Biden administration says about this assassination. And I think it needs to be careful. And I really wonder whether we're ever going to turn over a new leaf when it comes to US foreign policy in Latin America and in the Caribbean. You know, for example, again, I'm not an expert on Haiti at all, but I do understand that we know the language that is used against countries that dare try and take more ownership or nationalize their resources, such as oil, right? Or their natural resources in any kind of, you know, mining or whatnot. You know, Peru recently elected a socialist president, right, who's threatening to raise tariffs on a lot of the mining there. Venezuela, by the United States government, is accused of being undemocratic, etc. And you know, I'm not heralding someone like Nicolas Maduro. He has definitely been riddled with a lot of corruption. But I will say that it is interesting that when a country like Haiti or a country like Mexico that has a huge drug cartel, right, hugely influenced by, or El Salvador, right, hugely influenced by drug cartels, the United States somehow is completely mum, mostly because they're funneling a lot of money into the police state of those countries, into trying to so-called fight the drug war, i.e. lose the drug war, and propping up people like Moise in Haiti, even though they are overseeing a failed state, if you will. And I hate that term, but you know what I'm saying. So it's interesting, we have to pay attention to the different ways the United States behaves, whether or not someone is taking control of their own natural resources, or whether they're like low key okay with like cartels running their country and profiting off of the drug war.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the most minor of points that you made. But yeah, the failed state thing, sort of like, it's very passive. Like, it failed. Why? I don't know. Probably some other people. No, it's a broken state. It's been broken by other states. Its back was broken over someone's knee, effectively. Yeah, that's a good point. And I don't know what Biden is going to end up saying. I saw a message from Trudeau saying, you know, it's a tragedy. We offer all of our support to the people of Haiti and all that stuff. We'll see what form that comes in. I don't know what the US is going to end up saying. I am assuming there has to be some sort of public statement. If it hasn't already come out, obviously we're live, so we can't be checking on everything. But we will see. With that, we are going to take our first break a little bit early today. But when we come back, an early for our show. Meanwhile, in news from around the world coming up after this. Okay, everybody, let's launch into this. I'm assuming we're ready to go, Marissa. I should have asked during the break, but there we go. You know what, actually, before we jump into this, I did want to let you know, as we do every day, very exciting episode of Indisputable coming up right after the damage report today. We go 90 minutes now, and then it's right into Indisputable at youtube.com/IndisputableTYT. Today, the co-host Benjamin Dixon, BC Silver will be a guest, and John Burnett's a conservative who will be appearing on there as well. Should be fun, should be spicy. TYT.com/polls. If you want to vote in the Rudy poll, we'll be giving the results a little bit later on. And with that, let's do this thing. Whew, that's a kangaroo there. Meanwhile, in Australia, their lockdown has been extended, now entering its third week. This is a serious lockdown. It's kind of like what they pretend lockdowns in the US were like. But anyway, it's going through July 16th. And here's what's going on in Australia. There have been more than 300 COVID infections linked to a limousine driver who tested positive back on June 16th. He is thought to have been infected while transporting, you guessed it, a US flight crew from Sydney Airport. Now, I don't know for sure that they know that that's for sure where it's from, but that's the belief. And last week, almost half of Australia's population was locked down, with cities on the east, west, and north coast tightening pandemic restrictions due to clusters of infections that had developed. Some of those lockdowns were as short as 3 days. Sydney and its surrounding areas are the only part of Australia still in lockdown. And the main reason for this is that only about 9% of Australian adults are fully vaccinated. heightening fears that the Delta variant, or maybe the new Lambda variant, could quickly spread beyond control. So right now they are taking it very seriously. They have been taking it about as seriously, Francesca, as any country in the world throughout this thing. We're gonna give some of those updated numbers in a second, but just a few infections are enough for them to seriously lock down a significant part of the entire country.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if we cared about human life that much. I just 300 people getting sick. I mean, yeah, and it will, like, it'll be okay. They will be able to control it because they are taking 300 cases seriously. So when the next pandemic rolls around, yes, I said it, you know, we need to look to countries like Australia. But sadly, oh God, we're just gonna have the same debate over and over again about masks and freedom and et cetera. And I do think it is interesting because, you know, I don't think that anyone would say that Australia is China. I don't think Australia is, like, in terms of, you know, there's been a narrative which is like, well, you know, if your country is a little bit more totalitarian, you know, your government is a little bit more iron fisted, that you can, like, you know, it's bad for democracy, but it's good for, like, controlling the spread of a disease, right? And a virus. But Australia is kind of proving that that's not the case, that you can still be, like, you know, a fine democracy that doesn't have, like, you know, certain web pages X'd out that you're not allowed to visit, you know, or, like, you know, tracking opposition leaders. And also not give up your, like, so-called freedom in order to, for the benefit of the entire nation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so. I'm gonna disagree slightly with one thing that you said there. When you talked about us, you know, in the next pandemic, which now is gonna become a thing, we're gonna have the same debates, sort of, but not exactly the same, because there's not gonna be that first month or 2 month period where right wingers are, like, looking to their God figures, like, how should I respond to this? They're just instantly gonna be opposed to literally anything being done. Like, not just I don't want a vaccine, I don't want you to wear a mask. That's what we're instantly gonna have on day one. So that's gonna be fun. Now, there were other ways this could be done. Australia is another example. Australia has been relatively successful in containing clusters throughout the pandemic. That's according to the AP. They've had fewer than 31,000 cases and 910 deaths. And since October, they've recorded one COVID-19 death, an 80-year-old man who died in April after being infected overseas and diagnosed in hotel quarantine. Which isn't even really a case for them then. And by the way, as with any country, it is possible that there are people who've gotten sick, people who've died that aren't being included in these numbers. I certainly can consider that as a possibility. But it is clear that they have been far more successful, even accounting for the smaller population. They've been far more successful. Right now, there are 37 COVID-19 cases in Sydney hospitals. Seven are intensive care, the youngest in their 30s. As a reminder, people in their 30s can get COVID and can get hospitalized by it. But this is them taking it seriously in the absence of vaccines. And they don't have 9% of their population vaccinated because they believe Tucker Carlson. It's not that sort of situation. A lot of countries, like the US, have bought up the supply. I don't know all of the things influencing vaccine availability in Australia, but it is almost certainly not the same as the US, where the remaining people who don't want to get vaccinated, the last 40% or so, are just choosing not to because they believed something, you know, Naomi whatever said or whatever on Twitter. So no, they're doing what they can.
Well, I mean, and this is a perfect example, right? Because it's like, you know, like the Bible, doesn't the Bible say something about the last shall be first? Well, guess not. Guess not in COVID, because if you are, you know, have the lowest number of COVID cases and you do a really, really good job, you don't get vaccines. And that is, you know, something that, you know, while I am very, very grateful that I have been vaccinated and that Americans have access to the vaccine, it is not lost on me that other countries that have done a better job containing the virus are not getting the vaccine. And Australia is a great example, and many, many other countries around the world where they're not poor countries, right? So they're not gonna necessarily qualify for the COVAX program, right? They are not, like, But they have done a very good job within their limited resources and limited capabilities to limit the spread of the virus. And there is literally no reward for that. No one is helping them, you know, either develop their own vaccine, give them the, you know, capability to develop the mRNA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's just not on the book. So I can only imagine as an Australian how frustrating that must be, because yeah, you don't get a cookie. Your cookie for, like, you know, not spreading the virus is just staying alive. And yeah, there's really not an end, and getting access to cookies, and there's not really an end in sight. So I can only imagine just how upsetting that is.
Yeah. Yeah. So look, we talked yesterday about Marjorie Greene saying literally in a tweet, nobody cares about the Delta variant. Well, that's not true. Some people do, and people who could theoretically die in Australia if they treated science the way Marjorie Greene does, could have died and will not now, because Australia is taking it seriously. Whereas in some states, in some areas in the US, COVID is once again on the rise, which means in a few weeks, hospitalizations will be on the rise, which means in a month, deaths will be on the rise. Hopefully not to the extent that they were in past waves, almost certainly not, because you know the majority have now been vaccinated. But we are gonna once again have a bunch of deaths that didn't have to happen because we've chosen not to do what other countries have shown works. But meanwhile, in Canada, ocean life is going through a rough patch. And I want to talk about this for two reasons. One, because it's objectively an important story, I think, that says a lot about what's coming in the future thanks to climate change, but also to demonstrate a principle. So, and we talked about this yesterday on the show. You remember the Gulf of Mexico, how it was like suddenly on fire? In case you missed it, here's some video of that. So that right there is a hot story about hot water, and it's clearly terrible and we should definitely be talking about it, but it's also exciting and sexy. It's the water is on fire, but the water just being hot could be even worse actually. And this is a demonstration of it. So we have a marine biologist at the University of British Columbia talking about the recent heat dome that affected the Pacific Northwest as well as Western Canada. This is Chris Harley, who says that he estimates that last week's record-breaking heat wave in British Columbia may have killed more than 1 billion seashore animals living along the Salish Sea coastline. He says a mussel on the shore in some ways is like a toddler left in a car on a hot day. They are stuck there until the parent comes back, or in this case, the tide comes back in, and there's very little they can do. They're at the mercy of the environment. And on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, during the heat wave, it just got so hot that the mussels, there was nothing they could do. Believes that the wipeout will temporarily affect water quality as well, as mussels and clams help filter the sea. Says that eventually they will recover, but heat waves will happen more frequently and with greater severity due to climate change. So water was certainly heating up in the Gulf Coast, but it was also heating up out there too, which is not good for a lot of different species. Clams and mussels, fish, all sorts of things. And all of these have knock-on effects. After they're affected, they affect other things as well. And by the way, it's not just animal species. Marine foundation species like coral reefs, kelp beds, and seagrass meadows depend on cooler temperatures to survive as well. And researchers are going to be planting some sensors so they can investigate what is happening in that area. But preview, not good stuff. These species are made to live in certain temperatures of water, and the oceans are heating up. That's going on right now. That is going to have massive effects on both plant and animal life. And it may not be super sexy. It may not look like something out of Pacific Rim, but it's going on and it could be devastating. Francesca?
I'm just reminded of the part in Alice in Wonderland where the walrus and the carpenter story, you know, how Tweedledee and Tweedledum tell the story, and the walrus eats all the little oysters. And that when you talk about leaving a baby in a hot car and that's what climate change did, I just imagine that walrus like and just eating up all those mussels.
You're thinking about awesome cooked seafood. That's what you're thinking about.
You can't put the words cooked and seafood in the same sentence. And for me also, babies in hot cars makes me very, I'm just kidding. I'm joking. I don't eat babies. Okay, internet.
You need to be careful because we're in QAnon time still.
I don't. I am pro-choice, however, but I don't eat babies. I'm a feminist, but I don't eat babies. No, it's so sad. And it's, look, guys, when BC is this hot, like, you know, there's a problem. Like, when jokes about it being cold in Canada no longer apply, you're like, we're effed. We're totally effed. And obviously the mussels and other sea creatures, kelp, all this stuff, they play hugely important roles to the ecosystem of oceans. And actually, you know, stuff that we can't quantify. And this is the whole point about climate change generally, right? Is that what is the price of a mussel, right? Not like to eat, but like, what is the cost of, you know, what does the ocean cost? How much is the ocean? We live in a hyper-capitalist society that does not at all factor in the invaluable importance of the sea, of water, right? And so long as we don't do that, I'm not saying we should do that, but it's the reason that corporations, oil companies can dump whatever toxic sludge, cannot make sure that they're underwater pipelines. Although I would argue, is there anything such as a safe underwater pipeline? But that all of these things, it's the ways that we just use the environment, use our natural habitat as a dumping ground, and then make money in the meantime. And meanwhile, you know, the ocean doesn't have a lawyer, sadly. And these mussels, although they should, they're not lawyered up. And you know, Rudy's offered, but obviously mussels are smart. The oysters know, like, you know, they don't want a crook. So yeah, it's interesting. I know, I can't remember, maybe the chat remembers, like, there was a, I believe, a river in like the Amazon or something where like the river was given basically personhood rights, so allow, like, i.e. corporate rights, and allowed to like argue and sort of its case in court, obviously through a lawyer, which is kind of the only way to do it, because otherwise we just literally don't value our natural world that we depend on to survive. Okay, I'm done.
Well, I looked it up. The Ganges and Yamuna rivers are now considered legal persons in an effort to combat pollution. It is an implementation of environmental personhood. And I did not know about the rivers. That is interesting. There are others as well. There's a national park in New Zealand that's an environmental legal entity. In the US.
Yeah.
Probably not making as much progress, but there are others. We need to look into that more. No, and I appreciate a lot of what you just said there. Yeah, we like, if you, you know, we in our production meeting, we talked briefly about an activist who destroyed some oil equipment that's gonna get like 10 years in prison or something. If you destroy that, that's property, you go to jail. If you wreck the ocean, what are you gonna do? Like, maybe if it's oil and there's birds and there's cameras, if you have all of those things, then maybe you can get in trouble. But if you just heat it up, if you boil it, if you make it not habitable, that's totally fine. That's a, like, weird stance we've taken.
Like, after the Deepwater Horizon like explosion and accident and BP's responsibility, like, what? I know they were made to pay a fraction of money, but they are still in existence. The fact that that money did not liquidate them because of the incredible value of the ocean is a crime. Right? Like, if you actually put a dollar price on it, there's no way that BP could ever pay the amount that it should have for ruining the Gulf.
Yeah. Yeah. And what they have to pay generally, we know from Exxon, not much. They pay a few politicians. That's what they pay. And then they avoid the legal liability. They get the legislation that they want. Meanwhile, Iceland did something that let me talk about 4-day work weeks once again. So they ran an experiment to see what a 3-day weekend would be like, what effect it would have on the working class in Iceland, where on average, most employees work 40 hours per week. So they're already doing better than us. And it's illegal to work more than 13 hours a day. That's amazing. When the trial started, the employees worked 40-hour weeks and later shortened it to 35 to 36 hours. Participants said the reduced hours allowed them to focus on exercising and socializing, which enhanced their work performance. So this was a 4-year trial with thousands of participants. So they had a lot of data over a good period of time. And my favorite part of the reporting on this comes from this USA Today article, which says the trial reflected the working population's wishes. When do you ever see that? Just, you know, this is like what the people who do the work want. So we figured we do that. That's not how anything works in America. But anyway, as a result of the 4-year trial, researchers found that worker well-being dramatically increased across a range of indicators, from perceived stress and burnout to health and work-life balance. And as a result of it, according to the study, wrapping it up and talking about what has come from this study, which the operating period ended in 2019, they said by the time of this report's publication in June 2021, 86% of Iceland's working population are now on contracts that have either moved them to shorter working hours or give them the right to do so in the future. These trials are therefore an incredible success story of working time reduction, of interest to campaigners and workers worldwide. I hope so, which is why we're covering it. We cover basically any trials like this that go on in different countries. And this was a big one, and it confirms what virtually all of them have said before, Francesca, that you can be just as productive while having a better work-life balance and suffering less stress and other health consequences.
Yeah, but that kind of depression leads to brilliance like Bjork. Okay? Tell me that there would have been a 4-day work week Bjork. No. That music is from the, like, you know, the soul, the like tarnished and tormented, overworked, sad societal 9 to 8. Anyway, no, I'm looking forward to Happy Bjork. That's amazing. Obviously, like, I, as a freelancer who will work a lot of one day and then not a lot the next day, fully on board with this. I believe when you have a full-time job, you go into the office 4 hours. That's how much you can be productive for. The rest, jerking off. The rest is nothing. The rest, I mean, not literally jerking off unless, you know, you're tubing or whatever, but like, the rest is just, you know, talking about, you know, the weekend, water cooler, oh, what are we gonna get for lunch? Beep, 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 beep. And which is great, that's good. But like, also, why do we need to be here? Why don't we just, you know, 4 hours, put in hard work, and then you know, take a little nap. And yeah, so I like this. I also think it's so interesting the way that, you know, tech companies have tried to innovate the work week and innovate their workers by like giving them special buses that takes them to and from their workplace, but then they have to work on the bus. In fact, their work day starts when they get on the bus. Yeah. You know, there's Wi-Fi there, there's whatever. And then, or it's like, there's nap pods. Like, why don't you just take a nap in a nap pod? Yeah, why don't I just go home? You know, like, why don't you just let me, you know, oh, you, we get haircuts, we get this, and it's all these like perks. And so the way that I feel like, you know, hypercapitalism has managed to like take care of its own ass is by being like, oh, no, we're gonna give you more little perks. And you're like, yeah, but the perk of not coming to this place and spending time with my family and going outdoors is way better than anything you could ever offer me. Yeah. So I love this. I think people are way more productive when they have more free time and they're happier. It's not about just productive, happy. Happy equals less mass shooty, you know, because we can't get gun control.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I like you, the fact that you just focused on should we do something to produce more happiness. It sort of sounds weird because we don't talk about that in America. You're not supposed to be happy. You're supposed to be productive. Or maybe we'll zoom out. You're supposed to be successful, not happy, really. So is it any wonder that people in a lot of other countries are happier? No, mm-hmm. Happiness does matter. It has a direct effect both on productivity as well as your quality of life and all that. So yes, I think that we should be pushing for those things. And we've done enough videos about this that nobody watches. That I know what the response is going to be, which is that obviously the people in charge don't want this. They love grinding us down into a gray paste. But also, some workers will be opposed to this. Either they'll think that it's too much or whatever, because they've been indoctrinated to believe that you should be working constantly, nonstop. Mm-hmm. Or they'll say, but that, no, not that. No, come on. We need to be worrying about wages or health insurance. And I would say, no, we need to have a vigorous labor movement that can fight on all fronts for all of these things. I think that these can be complementary movements Also, there's all sorts of abuses. We need to fight against all of them.
Yeah, and I also, you know, there is, you know, in countries that want to stimulate the local economy, they'll like give people more time off because they want to stimulate like domestic, you know, travel and like supporting the local economy. And that works. If you had an extra day off, that might be an extra day that you're supporting a local business. That's an extra day that you're going out to eat or whatever it is, you know, or like enjoying a park. I don't know. That there is an economic benefit here, but it's just, again, not quantifiable in the ways that we are used to our BS financial sector quantifying everything.
Exactly. Yeah. No, this needs to be part of the conversation. As I say every time we talk about this, we had a movement that worked to give us a weekend, this novel concept. And then we worked for decades and decades and decades and decades, being more and more productive, producing more in raw terms, in profits for corporate overlords. When, if ever, do we get an extra day? How many centuries must we toil? It's up to us to decide, okay? As India Walton said, we are the workers, we do the work. Now we need to do the work to get the time off from our work.
And if you hate socialism, if anyone is out there and they hate socialism or communism, make sure to work through the weekend because socialists and communists and anarchists gave you that weekend through the American labor movement. So why don't you stick it to the libs and the socialists and work all through that weekend? Oh, also make your kid work in a mine.
Definitely. Okay, with that, we are gonna take another break. When we come back, oh God, the books, they're coming. The revelations are coming too. We've got a rough one for you after this. There are people in the chat talking about waffles because they know how hungry I am. That is very mean of you. Anyway, before we jump back in the news, another reminder, Indisputable is coming up with the amazing Benjamin Dixon, who's gonna be co-hosting with Dr. Rashad Ritchie. So that's exciting. In just a little bit, we're gonna find out how the poll worked out for Rudy Giuliani. We also need to get updated numbers on his actual things, by the way. So go to tyt.com/polls and you can get involved in that. Also wanted to let you know that many of you right now watching live or watching on our members app, or you might be watching on YouTube or on Twitch, thank you for that. But you should also know that while we are like a video first network, we actually started as a radio show. And audio content is still very important to us. So we've started a partnership with Acast so that you can listen to TYT whenever, wherever, and however you want. More details will be coming. For now, reminder, we are a podcast. So on the go, you can definitely see there's not a lot of details there, but they are coming. That cool teaser image is a taste of things to come for you and for me, because I don't know anything about this, but we're gonna find out together. So isn't that gonna be fun? Now, with that said, I'm gonna try to pretend how incredibly hungry I am as we launch into this next story. There's a book coming out soon. Frankly, we did win this election by Michael Bender, and it is, like all of the books of this variety, giving us a glimpse into something that perhaps we shouldn't glimpse, which is the things that Donald Trump thinks about the world and historical figures. And this one is a doozy. Apparently, on a visit to Europe to mark the 100th anniversary of the end of the First World War, Donald Trump insisted to his then chief of staff, John Kelly, well, Hitler did a lot of good things. Okay, that reportedly stunned Kelly. I don't know why, as is being reported in this book by the Wall Street Journal. So it's these early like looks into what's gonna be in the book. So Bender reports that Trump made the remark during an impromptu history lesson in which Kelly, quote, reminded the president which countries were on which side during the conflict and connected the dots from the First World War to the Second World War and all of Hitler's atrocities. So Donald Trump, who, let's just be clear, doesn't know about any of this, is told, here's what happened in World War I, here's what led to World War II, the development of the Nazi Party and all of that as being one of those things, and then you get all these atrocities. And Trump, the part he wanted to focus on was, hey, why are you only saying the bad stuff about Hitler? He did a lot of good things. So we're gonna have more from this, Francesca, but that's a take. He's playing devil's advocate. He's a contrarian. Aren't those great things?
He's a Nazi. Trump is a Nazi. Stop it, you guys. He's a white supremacist Nazi. We know that. The chat rooms, the 4chans, the 32chans are gonna be freaking out about this news. Super excited. David Duke's gonna be super excited. From the moment that he did not denounce David Duke for endorsing him and pretended like he didn't know who he was, we have known Trump is a Nazi. His ex-wife said he used to keep a copy of Mein Kampf on the table. He said there were very fine people on both sides of a fascist rally and an anti-fascist rally. Guys, he is a Nazi. This is and it's like, yeah, now we know. I mean, we've known. How long have we known? But now we truly know. And the idea that he's whatabouting World War II and Hitlerism and Nazism is just like, unless, in what world? Like, is it like, gee, they were really good at synchronizing their hand salutes? Look at the way they goose step in unison. I do want to know.
You want to know the negative? I'll give you the negative in 1 second. But before I get to the second negative, I do want to point out though, there is one definite villain here. Well, there's two definite villains. So one definite villain, let's be clear about this, is Hitler. He's just a bad guy. You don't need to give it to him. The second one is Trump. The third one maybe though is, so how long did you know about this?
Yeah.
Michael Bender, author of Frankly, We Did Win This Election. Did you know that Trump was praising Hitler before the election? Because that would have been useful. He said this 2 years before the election. Could we have maybe found out about it? Now I say this is a maybe because I don't know. Maybe Kelly told Bender 3 weeks ago.
No,
I have no idea.
No, no.
But maybe you could point this stuff out when it happens. Not that it would matter because this is America, nobody cares. He could literally just goose step up and down a rally platform and he'd have Tucker Carlson running interference for him. But you could have mentioned this, buddy. Anyway, I know you want to sell a book, but I want to stop fascism. So competing concerns. That said, here's more of what happened. Bender says unnamed sources reported that Kelly, quote, told the president that he was wrong, but Trump was undeterred, emphasizing German economic recovery under Hitler during the 1930s. So that was apparently the good things that he did. So just to be clear, Donald Trump, who thinks that we're too harsh on the Nazis, says that, okay, so maybe you demonize some groups, increase domestic xenophobia, get people into the whole fascism thing, get them to run through the streets, beating and killing people, ransacking buildings and all that. But if that's what it takes to recover the economy, maybe it's worth it. That's probably just a thing that he thinks about Germany in the 1930s. It's probably not a thing that we need to worry about, Francesca.
No, and by the way, for the record, your economy was trash, bro. Okay, you didn't do this. Your head wound Hitler. I've said it before. You'll never be him. And he's in hell, just like, how dare people compare me to that guy to me? All right. Here's the thing about all this is like, even if historians looking at World War II, historians looking at the rise of the Third Reich and Nazi Germany, they mostly couch it. The way to couch it is that World War I devastated Germany. It was unnecessarily punitive and potentially created a condition that was economically ripe for a fascist to come into power. Much like in the way you might say that 2+ failed wars in the Middle East, bringing back, you know, loads of soldiers with PTSD, decimating our economy, you know, having our infrastructure start to crumble, our healthcare system go into disarray or sort of not be fixed, that some of that stuff also led to our own head wound Hitler coming into power in 2016. Also a terrible candidacy from Hillary Clinton, but
that too.
That is the way that it is discussed. It's not discussed like, well, he was good actually. Why don't we talk about the good things?
Well, look, to be fair, we have to allow him to respond. Liz Harrington, spokesperson for Trump, says that the conversation being reported is totally false. President Trump never said this. It is made up fake news. probably by a general who was incompetent and was fired. I feel like that was a statement that she did get a little bit from Trump, or she just understands him really well. So he's another one of those people that Trump brought on that was so incompetent that he had to be fired. Trump just had tons of those for some reason in a way that does not in any way reflect negatively on him. So that makes it made up fake news. Okay, and maybe the Washington Post journalists are just making it up based on one source or whatever, kind of doubt it, but maybe. I do want to remind people of a similar bit of history though that did happen. Remember, and this was in 2018 when he was supposed to go to an American cemetery near Paris. I think it was the same trip. So he was reported as he blamed rain for not going to the cemetery, saying that the helicopter couldn't fly and the Secret Service wouldn't drive him there, even though other world leaders who were in Paris at the time did drive to it. So that turned out not to be true. He apparently, according to four sources, didn't want to go because he feared his hair would become disheveled in the rain, and because he didn't believe it was important to honor American war dead. In fact, he thought it was kind of important to dishonor them because he said, quote, "Why should I go to that cemetery? It's filled with losers." He said the 18 Marines who lost their lives at a recent battlefield were suckers for getting killed. Now, all of this is not a direct quote. These are multiple sources saying he said that. And the same trip where he apparently said, you kind of got to give it to this Hitler guy. So maybe all of these sources are making up everything. Maybe that's possible, or maybe it's consistent with virtually everything else we know about him, up to and including his bedtime reading material.
Every single news outlet needs to ask Republicans about this. What do they believe? Do they think that Trump was right and that Hitler had good qualities? Put the microphone in their face and have them answer it, okay? Because this party has been greasing the wheels of like a new neo-Nazism, and they continue to do it. Continue to do it. There were people in the Capitol riots wearing Holocaust denial shirts, right? How much more to me? Every single day, I don't want to hear jack about bipartisanship. I don't want to hear jack about a policy. I don't want to hear anything about your little gang of whomever. No, you ask them about this. You ask them whether or not they condone and support Trump's comments on Nazism, whether they condone and support all of the people who love him and by association love what the Republican Party's become.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because coming up, we're in just a couple of minutes, we're gonna have to take our break for the end of the hour. But when we come back, we're gonna have an individual who just very recently has condemned his past condemning of Donald Trump just in time for the Hitler news. So that's a fun one. So we're gonna have that in a little bit. But before we get to that, I did want to, before we end the linear show, I want to let you know the results of the poll. So yesterday we covered Rudy Giuliani, who is looking to crowdfund his legal defense. I have some empathy for him. A lot of Americans get left behind and put in a position where they have to crowdfund their own medical treatments and that sort of thing. That said, it was kind of funny that he was looking for $5 million. And at that point, he had raised $9,590 from literally 100 people. He's America's mayor. He was a candidate for president and he has 100 donors. So anyway, we asked you, how many donors will he get by tomorrow morning? And 100, so the same number, got 33.77% of the vote. So a lot of faith in that. Slightly more, 38%. The winning bid here believed he would have 105. So about 5 extra donors. Just 12% of you thought he would get 50% more, 50 more. And about 16% believed he could get all the way up to 250. Now, I would love to tell you exactly how many he got, but unfortunately, since this has been talked about so much, you can no longer get to the individual page for his crowdfunding campaign. It's just listed in like a little thing that doesn't say how many donors with a bunch of others. So I can't say for sure, but I can say that he had been at 9,590. He's now at 9,799. So he has made $209 since then. So I'm gonna give it to the 105. I think he's gotten about 5 more donors since then, maybe 10, but this isn't Price is Right rules. So the 105 wins. Thank you to everybody who took part in the poll there. Wow, Rudy, you did so much and for this. Anyway, Wanna thank, that'll cover 15 minutes of legal fees, Blue Lizard Gut says. I don't think it will, honestly. Anyway, thank you to our linear audience. For those of you who are watching the members app on Twitch and on YouTube, we have a lot more, including Cori Bush, who has been targeted by multiple members of the right for her very accurate July 4th comments, as well as a ton of other news, which is gonna be coming up in just a little bit. So we're gonna take a short break, but we're gonna have more for you right after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.